This is Digital Story Podcast number 663, November 27th, 2018. Today's theme is Kelly Cox, pro sports photographer and Olympus visionary. I'm Derek Story. As a working sports photographer, Kelly knows that she needs every advantage to compete with her peers on the playing field. Her Olympus EM1 Mark II provides her with a competitive edge by not weighing her down and allowing her to maintain her energy during a long day of active shooting. Kelly joins me on today's show to discuss technique, gear, and how she broke into this exciting profession. So here in just a couple minutes, we're going to jump over to our talk with Kelly, and I have to tell you, she is fantastic. I think you are really going to enjoy this interview. Now, Kelly is based in Berkeley, California, and she's a freelancer for USA Today Sports Images, and she photographs all sorts of major sporting events, including the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, MLS, and NCAA football and basketball. She's covered multiple championship events, including the World Series, the NBA Finals, and the Super Bowl. Okay, so enough of her background. I'm just going to tell you she is the real deal. She really knows her stuff. She shoots Olympus. She's an Olympus visionary, one of the newest Olympus visionaries, and she has a lot of interesting things to say. So let's jump over to Kelly right now. I'll come back after we finish our chat. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, first of all, I know that you're primarily a sports photographer, so tell me the name of your gig and, you know, just a little bit about what you do.
So, as myself, I'm a freelancer for USA Today Sports Images, which has me covering all the pro and college teams in the Bay Area. Been very fortunate to cover World Series, Super Bowl, NBA Finals. And then I also started a photo company, KLC Photos, which is kind of a collective of photographers, and we are the official photographer for USA Rugby and also for Cal Athletics.
So how is it when you go from one sport to another? I mean, isn't each sport a little bit different? Do you have to kind of learn them each?
Yeah, they're all a little bit different in their own way. It's all sports and action and trying to capture emotion and the spirit of the game. But each new season that you start, you kind of think, oh, right, I forgot the speed and how I follow the ball. And you kind of have to reacclimate yourself with each season.
You know, it's funny. I feel that way before a lot of shoots where I just feel like, wow, I forgot everything I know about photography. and then about 5 minutes into it, I'm okay again. Do you shoot any indoor stuff, basketball, or are you mainly out on the field?
No, all of the above. So basketball, volleyball, gymnastics, you name it.
You're a newly minted Olympus visionary, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. I'm very excited about it.
It's cool. It's a very nice honor. It's very nice. That means you shoot Olympus gear, obviously. They kind of frown on visionary shooting with other brands.
That makes sense. I'm sure they would.
It does. But I'm guessing that you probably didn't shoot Olympus gear your whole career. So tell me a little bit about the early days in sports photography, a little bit how you broke into this, by the way. It's not an easy gig to break into. And what you shot with then.
So I was an incoming freshman at UC Berkeley, and I wanted to join the rally committee to wave the flag on the field at football games. And I would bring my little Canon Digital Rebel at the same time and take pictures of the football game, not knowing what aperture was, what shutter speed was, anything. But it was pretty fun, and I enjoyed some of the pictures that I made. So I reached out to the contract holder for Cal Athletics and said, do you want an intern? Here's 10 photos I took. They were garbage photos, but I learned so much and I fell in love with it and, you know, started working. By the time I was graduating, I was already working somewhat underemployed, as many photographers are when they start their career, but very committed to, hey, I'll give myself 10 years to make a go of this. 10 years later, here I am.
Did you just like fall in love with this? Did you just go, this is something I want to do?
Yeah, the more I started photographing and having played very rec level sports, it was incredible to see the impact of sports at a higher level from collegiate to pro, and just really, you know, fell in love with the energy of professional sports and college sports.
So now, what did your family say, you being an economics major at Berkeley, saying, Mom, Dad, I fell in love with, taking pictures. How did that whole thing go?
I'm very fortunate because my parents were incredibly supportive. They've always said, do what you love, find your passion. My sister was a chemical engineer and now works in biopharma and is named, 40 under 40, all-star in her field. So she often jokes that my job is much more glamorous to talk about. My parents would come to games and my dad enjoyed football, but I'm very fortunate that both of us were able to pursue our interests and find success and happiness in those fields.
Tell me a little bit about the evolution of camera gear.
Yeah, I started with the Rebel, and then I think my first lens was a 70-200, and I kind of made this progression step by step. I'd upgrade a lens, I'd upgrade a body, I'd upgrade a lens, add a lens, and always wanted to justify that whatever lens I was buying, I would cover that cost in the money I would make using that lens. My husband is an Nikon shooter, and then I started adding Olympus gear as my travel gear, so our household was full of all kinds of cameras, and using the Olympus gear for a year before they had the EM1 Mark II, it was a great travel camera. And it was fun, it was light. We do a lot of multi-day backpacking trips where I didn't want to carry even a 5D and the 16 to 35, but I wanted something more than an iPhone. So then there was just my hobby travel camera. When they introduced the EM1 Mark II and they added the 300 millimeter lens, it was kind of like, oh, this, I can use this for my pro work. This is legit. So at the end of 2016, right when they came out with it, I kind of convinced them to loan me the full kit from what I didn't have from travel gear to cover a football game. Because I said, I won't feel comfortable making the switch if I haven't covered football, because that's kind of the flagship of sports. And if it can't do that, it can't be my pro gear. And I don't want to wait through the whole summer and fall to make the decision to purchase the full set. I used it at that game. I used it at the Sugar Bowl. I used it in a downpour, no rain gear, was blown away by it, made the full switch.
So when you first started shooting with the EM1 Mark II, tell me about your favorite lenses as you're kind of getting to know the system and when you're out on the field and all that.
Yeah, I already had the 40-150. Which is a little bit extreme for travel gear, but I wanted to go all in with the system. And then when they added the 300, those are kind of your wheelhouse for a lot of sports. And I always like having a wide to get the huddle shot or something, so I had the 7-14. Then, as you do, you kind of start adding other gear. Most recently added the 12-100, which I love.
That's a great lens, isn't it?
It's fantastic. Yeah. There are the limitations of F4, so if you're shooting something really dark indoors, maybe not so much. But at Cal, I'm covering their basketball games with strobes, so that 12-100 is just the perfect range to go wide, to go long, whatever you want.
I'm going to ask you a personal question here.
Oh, okay.
All right, you ready?
Uh-oh.
All right, so how tall are you?
Oh, I will say I'm 5'8". Really, I'm 5'7¾", but I would like to be 5'8", so let's say 5'8".
All right, so let's say 5'8". So you're 5'8", and I'm not going to ask you how much you weigh, because my mom taught me never to do that, but I'm going to tell everyone that's listening, she's thin, okay? So she's 5'8", and what we used to say, willowy, okay? So.
But strong.
But strong, yes, and you have to be. So I think you probably know where I'm going with this. Now, when you're working a football game, you are going up and down the field, up and down the sidelines. You have to have probably at least two bodies, I'm guessing,
yes.
with maybe your 12 on one end and then your longer one on the other camera. So you're schlepping stuff around. I'm guessing that this was probably a factor in, your interest in Micro Four Thirds.
It was a huge factor. It's not so much the weight of the cameras when I'm holding them. Football, you might have it on a monopod. Baseball, you definitely have it on a monopod. And carrying them is fine. The where I noticed the weight was when they're hanging from my body, because there's only one camera in my hand at a time, and the other one is hanging on my neck, on my shoulders, on my back. And so with the Olympus stuff being so much lighter, that was a game changer. And at the end of the day, when I take my gear off, I feel great.
Mm-hmm.
Where previously, I was strong enough and I could hold the camera. I could run up and down the field with the camera, all of that. But when it was hanging on my body, I would end each day taking it off, kind of laying flat on my back and letting
it's
out
like
a big sigh.
It's like when we go backpacking, right? I mean, you know, when you finally get into camp and you take off the backpack after you've had it on for however many hours and you feel like you can float almost, you know, but then at the same time, your shoulders are dying.
Yeah.
I could totally see that. And then there's this kind of this clunky banging around of just big stuff too, right? You know, that's kind of awkward. I know when I'm moving around a lot and I have really big gear, I just sort of feel like I have these, you know, this albatross on me. And, you know, this stuff is so much easier to manage that way, right?
Yeah, so much lighter. And because it's Micro Four Thirds, you can have effectively a 600 millimeter lens that's truly the size of what would be a 70 to 200, maybe.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. And light and so much lighter. So speaking of Micro Four Thirds, so in the mirrorless world right now, this 2018 has been the year of full frame mirrorless, right? Now, I shoot with people on assignments. A lot of times they're doing video and I'm doing stills and they're going, you know, you don't shoot full frame. And I'm going, I don't need to. On my commercial work, I usually have the M1 Mark II and, you know, the glass that I like. I don't shoot with the 300 very much. They loaned it to me, but they wanted it back in a week.
So. Ouch.
Which is the shortest period of time they've ever loaned me a lens ever. I mean, I usually get at least a month or two.
Hot commodity.
It's a hot commodity. So, and I just say, you know, I haven't had clients say anything about the image quality or the resolution or any of that stuff. And some of the work that I do ends up being a billboard, you know, and of course there's viewing distance and all that involved. So I just say it hasn't been an issue for me. What do you say? I mean, how? I'm sure you get asked that question. Photographers are always talking on the sidelines, right?
Yeah, it works for the work that I do, for mm-hmm. sure. I'm working with Calathletics. They're making posters out of my images that they hand out at games that are the short viewing distance. You know, an iPhone can make a billboard, and that's the smallest sensor around. And, you know, I can see where some people do need perhaps medium format, perhaps full frame. But for the work that I'm doing, I can make a great print. I can publish it proudly and with a Micro Four Thirds sensor. It's kind of more not the size of the sensor, but the quality of the sensor.
Exactly. And I think that's a really good point. Now, the other issue is, of course, you know, on the wide end, it's harder to get wide. And then dropping out the background. What lens do you use when you want to drop out the background? I'm not going to tell you what my go-to lens is for that, but because I'm curious to hear what yours. But, you know, sometimes you do want to soften that background a bit and, you know, have the, you know, the subject be the really the focal point. What do you use for that?
Right. Well, I do have the 25-1.2. Mm-hmm. So if I want to do something like that, for the 40-150 at 2.8, I think as long as, you know, you're not trying to capture the subject that's right against the wall. When they're close to you and the other side of the field is far away, you know, it's distance that's providing that clean, crisp look.
It is. It is. And you do have that distance working with you because you're shooting in big arenas a lot and so forth. So you the 25-1.2, by the way, is a nice lens.
Mm-hmm.
I like the 45-1.2.
I don't have that.
Oh.
But I do hear good things, so I am
that 45
considering.
1.2, I have to tell you, that has become one of my favorite lenses.
I believe it.
So it's crazy, they have this older lens. It's a 75mm f1.8, and I don't know if you've ever seen it or shot with it. It's kind of a heavy lens, it's a metal lens. It was one of their first wide aperture medium telephoto lenses. That lens has some kind of lens formula that's just magical, and it can drop out a background as good as any lens that I've ever used on a DSLR. You know, it's a crazy lens.
I don't have it, but I did see it last week, and as it was described, was if there was ever a sexy lens, that's a sexy lens.
Yeah, and I got I ponied up. I went all in, and I got the metal lens hood for it with the little screw
nice.
On the side. Yeah, so it's truly a sexy lens, but it does a wonderful job of that. You know, so backgrounds to me aren't really an issue. Now, on the wide end, yes, we do have to work a little harder on the wide end, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important, I'm sure that's an important thing for you, because sometimes you're right there in the middle of the action and you need to capture that moment of celebration or whatever it happens to be.
Right. And I think the 714 is great. I also have what I call the dummy lens, which is the fisheye body cap.
Oh, I love that lens.
I love that lens. I use it all the time. I can get a great huddle shot where I get in the huddle. I call it the dummy lens because it has only three different focus settings, kind of the 0.2, the mid-range, and infinity. You can't really select what you're going to focus on. But when you're shooting that wide with a fisheye, you don't really need to. It's fantastic. It's great. It fits in my pocket. It's easy to carry around. I think when I first switched to Olympus, it wasn't let me use something with an adapter, because even though the lens would be compatible, it's nice to use a lens that's designed for that body. So this the 7 to 14 at 7 is fantastic.
It is. It is. It is good. And I want to go back to the body cap lens for a second. This is a lens that I never leave home without, ever, 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 because it is so small. It is so light. The quality is surprisingly good for a $95 lens or however much they charge for that thing. That is a crazy lens. That is just right. A steal.
It's just fun.
It's fun. It's fun. And I get shots of that thing, and I show people, and they go, wow, that is really a cool shot. What did you... Because, you know, they always ask us what we used. Like, we didn't have anything to do with it ourselves. And I tell them that, and they go, what? What is that? And I go, it's just a body cap fisheye. And I don't think anyone else makes anything like that that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Not that small, that compact.
Yeah, it's just crazy. Do you mind talking a little bit about being a woman in what is seen as often as kind of a man's world, you know, in this type of work? I mean, I'll let you take it from there. I opened the door.
I think I've been very fortunate. There were a lot of women that were pioneers that had much more of a struggle of convincing people that they even belong on the field. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I am reaping the benefit of the nightmares that they lived through. There's obviously just a difference in being a woman compared to being a man. And ultimately, I would say my experience has been wonderful, specifically in the Bay Area. When I travel to other places, I do find there's a little bit more kind of macho going on, where I had a group of photographers that were all interested in the Olympus and saying, oh, that's really cool. Tell me more about it. Wow, fascinating. I really like it. And I was saying, oh, here, you can hold it. And one of the photographers came up. This was a group of men. And another man came up and kind of, you know, was feeling a little bit proud of himself and said, oh, I guess that's okay if you have small hands. And it was so weird and off-putting, especially because he didn't even hold it in his hands. And what a lot of people say about the Olympus camera is it feels like the DSLR. They like the way it's in your hands. But he felt like he had some authority to sort of make that comment, and it was a little strange.
That is funny. That is a little, because I knew there had to be at least one or two instances. You just can't be doing what you're doing without having... You know, I'm just walking around in the world and I get weird people coming up to me, you know, so
right.
You're doing what...
I think, too, that I've been very lucky, and being a woman, it's kind of just different. You might have a different photography style and approach. So when I show up to a game, I think people trust me more, especially if I'm covering youth sports. No one thinks I'm the creepy guy. And so it's easier for me to build trust with a team to put my hand and camera in the middle of a woman's huddle between their legs. In that sense, I'm being given the benefit of the doubt by being a woman that I'm there for a good reason. Granted, they know me, they know where my photos get published, they know what I'm there to do. Some of that may be because I'm a woman, some of it may just be their own familiarity with me.
I think there is something to it, because when I used to do weddings, I always made sure that my second shooter was female for that very reason. Because there is a certain thing about the energy of a woman. And if I had a woman with me when I'm doing something where people don't know me, it just goes easier. And mm-hmm. To be honest with you, a lot of times when I'm going to be out doing street photography, I love it if my wife comes with me. Mm-hmm. Because she just softens the situation a little bit. And takes out that notion that I'm a creepy guy. You know,
right.
And I don't look like a creepy guy, but you know, and I don't act like one for sure. But definitely, it's just easier when she's there. You know, it's just easier when there. I think there's something to that.
There's a trade-off of there's drawbacks and benefits, and
yes.
Navigating that and working it to your advantage
yes.
can help.
I absolutely agree. So you're young, you're strong, you got a lot of energy right now. Is this your career? I mean, have you decided that this is what I'm going to do? This is what I am?
I would say so. I'm more than a decade in now, and I've reached a lot of, you know, check marks that I wanted in my career. And so now it's exploring where I want to go next. Being an Olympus visionary is a great opportunity to start teaching and sharing some of my experiences, as well as, you know, showing photographers that there is gear that is lighter and more budget friendly to make it more accessible to more people. In photographing sports, I hope to be in this for, you know, the rest of my career. I enjoy it. I love it. And that's where the weight plays a big factor, because I know photographers that have been doing this for decades who have taken, you know, short disability leave or had their doctor tell them they can only carry one camera because it's hurting their shoulders and they're in pain. Being a freelancer, I don't quite have the luxury to take time off for my body. So I need to keep my body healthy, and having lighter cameras, not worrying about that. And also, I want to cover a football game with two lenses. I think you can, and no image is worth sacrificing your body. But if you can create great images and not sacrifice your body, I think using this gear will help me have that long career, help me stay excited. I think what Olympus is creating and putting out there, you know, it was the future 10 years ago when they came out with Micro Four Thirds mirrorless, and it will be the future moving forward.
Yeah, no, I very much agree with what you're saying. What advice do you have to people that, you know, are thinking about photography as part of their career? I don't say anymore, you know, that they want to be a photographer, because I think you have to think broader than that. I think you have to think that photography could be part of my career. Maybe it'll evolve into being my full career. I don't know. But what are the sort of things when people ask you, what should I be doing? What should I be thinking about if I want to have photography as part of my life?
I think taking a lot of pictures and being critical in evaluating the pictures that you take and make, and always trying to make a better picture. When I give workshops, I'll compare two photos where one is a good picture, but if you change your angle slightly, even in the same game, you can have a significantly better photo. That's the start for just making nice images. For actually having a career, it's a lot of the less glamorous stuff that is knowing how to tag your photos, add captions, how to deliver them, who to deliver them to, understanding who your client is, who you want your client to be, and kind of navigating your career through who values these images and how do I make my images more valuable to the clients I want.
Yeah, so really looking at it through the eyes of the person that you're delivering these images to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's a good point. And then also I would add one thing that you did, which is be bold, right? Be bold. Go up and say, look, I want to do this for Cal. Who do I talk to see if I can get on as an intern, if I can get on as an assistant, if I can just get my foot in the door one way or another? I think you have to be bold, don't you?
Right. I think bold and building friendships. I think right now, with so much focus on social media, we forget that human real-time interaction is going to lead the way to most of your paid gigs. You know, you can build this great community online, you can reach a lot of people, and that's fantastic, but everything that I've been hired for has been through someone I've known, someone I've worked with, someone who knows someone I've worked with, in a very tangible way.
It's the same for me. It's the same for me. And, you know, it's interesting, you build these relationships, and when you can stay in the career for a few years, even if the person, you know, that you worked with over here, if they leave, then they go somewhere else, you know, it's amazing how many times they'll call you and say, hey, I'm over here now, we've got some work, you know, can we talk about it? And that is a relationship that moved from one place to another, and they remembered me. And I think that the human contact is huge in what we do. And online, Online is interesting because to me, people say you have to have an online presence if you're going to be successful and everything. I think having an online presence is important. I don't think it's, for me anyway, it hasn't been important for paid gigs. It's been important for other things, the ancillary stuff, for speaking gigs, for teaching, possibly for getting, in my case, I write also, for getting writing gigs. It does help with all of that, for sure, because there's a certain name recognition. Mm-hmm. But for checks, it comes down to people, I have to say. Okay, last thing before we go here. I want a couple inside tips on for people who like shooting sports, because we have people, they have kids that are involved in sports, or maybe they're donating their time. What are some of the things that you keep in mind that you think that can help people?
Look for something that's a nice image before you add any action. So look for nice light, nice backgrounds. Kind of create the image before the athlete comes into the play. And then the trick is following the play, but cameras are so great now that they can follow and track and, focus on them really quickly. But if it needs to be a nice image, regardless of whether they're jumping and diving and catching, but what's the light doing? How are the shadows playing? Is it a dynamic and interesting image on its own?
That is such a great tip. We're just going to stop like right there.
Okay.
That is a fantastic tip. Kelly, thank you so much for taking time out and for, spending some time. By the way, she drove all the way up from Berkeley to Santa Rosa so we could do this in person and to save you of having to listen to a Skype interview. So thank you very much for doing that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for hosting me. It's been fun.
I told you she was interesting. She is really good. And the tip that she provided and the discussion about gear, I have to tell you, I just get excited all over again about Micro Four Thirds when I get to hang out with people like Kelly. And I just thoroughly enjoy spending time with her and looking at her photographs. Thanks so much, Kelly. The Portfolio Box Inspirational Photographer of the Week. So as I've been exploring the fantastic, interesting, provocative Portfolio Box photographers that are out there, this week I have another terrific artist to feature. I want to introduce you to Jacob Bockrud, a 22-year-old photographer from Sweden. Jacob is both creative and clean and has a very interesting style. I think you will enjoy his site. 22-year-old photographer from Sweden. I think it's very interesting what he has to say about Portfolio Box. I'm going to read you his statement and then I'll comment on it. Portfolio Box is a great way of getting your work out there. It is very, very simple to create a good-looking web page where you can upload all of your work and have it displayed in one place. I never have to do any sort of programming. I just upload my newest images and then it updates immediately on my personal page. Running my page recently helped me get a job in the industry. The work you are proud of should always be available for other people to enjoy and share, and this is a great place for it. You never know where publishing could take you. And I just think he makes a great point about getting your stuff out there, and not only getting your stuff out there, but getting your really good stuff out there. And we used to have this saying when I played basketball, that practice doesn't make perfect, it's perfect practice makes perfect. And what I mean by that is, it's not just having your images out there kind of helter-skelter or, just sort of shotgunning, yeah, I got my good stuff, I got my bad stuff, I got my, food shots from lunch the other day. I have it all mixed together. That's not what I'm talking about, and that's not what Jacob is talking about. And when you see his site, it'll make even more sense to you, in that what he's talking about is getting your great stuff together, or the stuff that you're really proud of, having it in one place, not having it diluted with the other things that you shoot, because we all shoot all sorts of stuff, and then getting that in front of people. And then that gives you the opportunity to be noticed. All sorts of good things can happen. So anyway, take a look at Jacob's page and see what you think. Now, if you signed up for a Portfolio Box Pro account and have published at least one page, then send me that link Just use the contact form on the Nimble Photographer, and we're running our own directory. And the link to our directory is here in the show notes. And if you haven't created your own Portfolio Box site yet, here's the way you do it. You just start with the link in the show notes, or start with a tile that's on every page of the digital story. Go over to the site. Now, you can either create a free page and really just sort of get to know how it works, and the free page can go on forever and you could stop right there. Or you can upgrade to a pro account, and then you get your own domain name. And you would think that the pro account would be all sorts of dollars and really expensive, but it isn't. It's $83 a year, and that includes your domain name, your custom domain name, which they take care of for you. And then on top of that, if you use the tile, like I just said to do, you get an additional 20% off that $83. So that is a great deal. This is great stuff. When are you going to create your Portfolio Box Pro site? I hope sooner than later. Okay, just a few updates for you. First of all, I want to remind you that last week's show, the show notes, we have both our holiday stocking stuffers and we have our holiday gift guide for photographers all right there. I hope you listened to the show. I hope you enjoyed the show. And then if there's anything that you want to follow up on, just go to the show notes. And remember, we have all of the show notes for the digital story up at the top in the nav bar. Just go to the podcast and you'll see show notes. And you can get this week's show notes, last week's show notes, and the week before. And I hope you found my gift suggestions helpful, both for you and for photographers in your life. I also want to mention that the TDS workshop page is right there, you know, right up there next to the podcast show notes. You will see workshops, and there you can get an overview of our 2019 workshop season. We have four events. We also have a show that where I just discuss all four of those events. We're getting deposits and pre-registrations right now. We're getting people on the reserve list. I hope you can come out and join us in 2019. I want to give a big thanks to our Inner Circle members and let you know that we're doing something new this month. We're doing a photo competition, a photo challenge, shall I say. Competition is not quite the right word, more of a challenge. We're doing night shot. And what I'm doing is I'm collecting night shots from our Inner Circle members. They're sending them to me, and then I'm going to publish one every couple days on our Patreon site, share them with people, and then we're going to pick one. We're going to pick one by December 15th, and that photographer will be featured. And I'm really excited about this. This is a lot of fun. I love photo challenges. The first batch of night shots that I've received have been really good, and I look forward to sharing them, and I look forward to, you know, honoring, you know, one of these photographers with a Nimble Photographer t-shirt. That's what they will get in addition to the accolades for being the best night shooter in our Inner Circle membership. Big thanks to our Inner Circle members that are the backbone of this podcast, and we just couldn't do it without you. And finally, be sure to visit our friends over at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. Fantastic printing paper. This is the time of year when you should be making those prints, making those fine art cards. This is a way that we can leverage our talent, right? You know, we've done all this work. We've invested in all this gear. Make some fine art cards. Share them with people. They will be thrilled to receive them as holiday gifts. And it is your chance to provide real artwork to people that you care about, to friends and family, and then you can sell them as well. You can learn about all of that by going over to the Red River Paper site, click on the tile, go to our landing page, get your paper ordered, and start making your artwork now. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Kelly is terrific. I've got more good stuff coming for you next week. Make sure you come by and join me. Until then, have a great week. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.